you. I want to tell you about four of the coolest guys I think you could find anywhere. Now, strangely enough, for some of you, they're found in the Bible. It's 2 Kings, the 7th chapter, the story of four guys who had a couple of pretty weird problems. One, they were hungry. Now, that's not so weird. Everybody's been hungry. But two, they were lepers. Now, that can be a problem, you know. And I want to introduce them to you. Their names are Harley, Farley, Charlie, and Claude. Now, I don't look for their names here in the 7th chapter of 2 Kings. You might have trouble finding them. We just hung these names on them because maybe you'll remember their story a little bit. Here's the way it went. Here's a city called Samaria. Now, the wall around the city of Samaria was said to be, now get this, 300 feet high and 80 feet thick. How's that for a wall? It's kind of wild. That makes the Berlin Wall look kind of small, doesn't it? But this thing was huge, and it surrounded the city. Now, here comes the Syrians. They're the bad guys. You know, they don't wear the white hats. And here are the Syrians, and they're coming up, and they're having a great time because they're conquering every city they come to, getting all the loot and everything. They come to Samaria, and they find that they can't get in. Now, the way they used to get in, it's not like these phony films, you know, you see on television these clowns that put these ladders up on the wall, and then the ladies run up and pour a cream of wheat and oatmeal on them, you know. It wasn't that way at all. They used to pile dirt up. They'd pile this dirt up, and they'd make a ramp, and that's how the army would come over. See, they'd get a whole slug of guys over at once. But this was too high. How are you going to get the, you know, how are you going to pile dirt up 300 feet high? Forget it. They didn't have bulldozers in those days. So here they are. They're inside the city. But the Syrians say, we'll just cut off all avenues of supply and we'll starve them out. Before you know it, there'll be white flags all over the place and they'll be inviting us in. So they did it. And I want to tell you, it worked. Because the old semis from all the supermarkets couldn't get in, and there were no goodies, there's no eggs, no bread, no nothing. They didn't even have any cereal, you know, to eat in the morning. This was really bad. Now, the people got desperate. Now, I won't go into the details here, but you can read it for yourself. They even turned to cannibalism. And one woman and another woman agreed that they would eat their own children. That's pretty bad, but that's exactly what happened. So it gives you a little idea how desperate they were. Now, when the king found out that some of the people were even turning to cannibalism, you know who he blamed? He didn't blame himself. He blamed God. Where'd he go? He went over to the home of God's man, God's prophet in that city. The guy's name happened to be Elisha. Now, God had told Elisha, look, when a king and his creepy buddy come over here, don't have anything to do with them. You know, they'll try to sweet-talk you out of the house, but the purpose is to lop off your ever-loving head. So don't go out, whatever you do. So, sure enough, when they came, and boy, Elisha, you know, he was no dummy. He rolled the piano over in front of the door, and he took the sofa and put it over there, you know, put the colored television over in front of the door and everything. He wouldn't get these guys in. So, sure enough, they come in, they knock on the door. Hey, Elisha, baby, how's it going? Hey, man, come on out and play tag, you know. And Elisha said, oh, forget it, you know. They said, well, listen, we need another one for our foursome, you know. How'd you like to hit a little ball? No, no, he said, thanks a lot, you guys, but I think I'll just stick around inside and, you know, watch Captain Kangaroo, if you don't mind. And these guys said, oh, come on, Elisha, you know, and then they ticked off, you know, when they realized that he knew what was happening. He said, oh, no, he said, I'm not coming out there. I know what you guys are going to do. And the king says, yes, sir. He says, I'm going to lop off your head. You're responsible for all this. And all these people are dying here, and we don't have enough food. And why don't you pray to your God? And it's all your fault and all God's fault. And Elisha said, all right, now look, don't get all excited. Tomorrow, 24 hours from today, everything's going to be back to normal. Would you believe it? And the guy standing next to the king, his creepy buddy, remember I mentioned? He says, Elijah, you're some kind of a nut. You know, you must have been on vacation from the funny farm. Anybody that make a remark like that has got to be out of his tree. Why, we've had troubles here for weeks, and you say tomorrow everything's going to be back to normal. Elisha said, that's right. All the stores are going to be stocked like they always were, and the prices are going to be down to normal. It's going to be real cool again. And boy, the guy really teed off. He said, Elisha, you weirdo, why, if God opened the windows of heaven, this thing could not be. And you know, Elisha said through the door, hey, you, creepy one. I have a little prophecy for you. You're going to see it with your eyes, but you're never going to taste the fruit thereof. And they said, no, nut, you know, let's get out of here. What kind of a deal is this, you know? So they walked off. Now,
I want you to meet Harley Farley, Charlie, and Claude, because they're down at the gate, and they're having a little meeting. Charlie always calls the meeting, because, you know, he's Mr. Leader in this whole thing. So he calls the leader, and the other guys are bored to death. You know, oh, Charlie and his dumb meetings, you know. Oh, he's going to have a committee meeting. You know, Charlie gets up and gives them all this snow job, and they all sit there and get bored. He said, hey, boys, I got an idea on how we just might be able to make it. They said, yeah, Charlie, yeah, yeah, you know, what's this? Let's surrender to the Syrians. What? Get the net. Charlie's, you know, gone over to him. But Charlie told him, look, he said, you guys are hungry. And he said, what might happen, they might take us prisoner of war. And if they do, they'll feed us. And if they kill us, so what? It's better than dying of starvation, right? And they voted on it, agreed to do it, and they took off. Now here they come across the field, across the desert. Now over in the Syrian camp, here's the sentries. They're standing out there griping like men. Yeah, yeah, why'd I have to get the duty? What a drag. He says, why, yeah, I took my camel over to the hump pump. I had it all set to go. I had his date with his gorgeous thing, you know, tonight and everything. And now what have I got? I got the duty. What a drag. Oh, gripe. Complain. I know none of you kids ever do that. And I've heard that, you know, this can happen. And the guy's standing. All of a sudden, one guy says, hey, do you hear something? The guy says, no, I didn't hear it. Hey, yeah. Yeah. That sounds like horses. Yeah, listen. Those are shouts, man. That's an army out there. You can hear those shields banging against the chariots. Yeah, man, that crazy king over there in Samaria, he must have gotten word out to the Egyptians and to the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites, and here we are. And there's the whole army. And here we are sitting out in the middle of the desert. We haven't got any protection or anything. Man, let's bug out. And they dropped their spears. They ran through the camp screaming, retreat, bug out, you know, peel off. This is terrible. Man, we're out here in the middle of nothing. We're going to get stomped, you know. So everybody just dropped everything. You talk about panic. Man, these guys were bombing out there without their pants and everything. They were pumping across the desert, just going for lickety-cut. And what was it? 4 miserable lepers. But what God did, and then I want to tell you, when you're on God's team, you can expect some miracles. Here were 4 guys who were on God's team. And God made the sound of 4 miserable lepers to sound like a huge army in the ears of those Syrians. Now, can you imagine when Harley, Farley, Charlie, and Claude got to that first tent? The first thing they noticed, no sentries. They said, aha, they picked us up on radar and they got the trap set. So they got there, and Charlie turned to Claude. He says, Claude, baby, you've been a member of our group for so long. And now, Claude, we're going to give you the distinct and wonderful privilege of assuming some responsibility and leadership in our group. Claude looked at him, and he says, thanks a whole bunch, Charlie. What do you got in mind? He said, we want you to go into that first tent. Claude said, Charlie, you are pretty clever, but you can hang it on your nose because I'm not going to understand. I'll bet there's a big Syrian in there with a sword. You're going to lop off my head. And they said, they voted on it. They said, Charlie should go because he's the big leader. Charlie got in, got down to that tent, scared to death. I mean, he did open the flaps. And man, when he opened the flaps, he disappeared in there. And the next thing they heard was... Man, they came charging down there, and sure enough, was the officer's mess. You know, and they had all these goodies piled up down there, and they went in and just chowed down. Boy, they were full for the first time in a week. They went to the next tent. You know what it was? All the gold and all the jewels and all these silver platters and everything that the Syrians had gotten on their campaign, you know, all the loot was in there. And they were running out in the back, digging a hole. They had the First National Bank of Harley and the Second National Bank of Charlie, you know, the Third National Bank of Farley. Man, then they'd run through and get a sandwich. Oh, they were really doing great. Right in the middle of all this, one of them stops and said, hey, hold it. Hey, hold it. We do not well. He said, get the net. We do not well. Are you kidding me? We're full where we were hungry, and we were lepers and beggars, and now we're rich, and you say we do not well? He said, how about all those people dying up back there in that city? Let's share it. They went back to share it, and of course the guy didn't believe them. And they got word to the king, and they sent the semis out, they loaded the place up, took it back, everything was full in the, you know, all the supermarkets were all stocked the next day, and the king asked his creepy buddy, remember him? Hey, we want you to sit down at the table and hand out the ration cards. And the guy says, sure, be glad to. The next morning, the last thing this guy ever said in his life was, hold it, ladies, line up! That's the last thing he ever said. And the Bible says, in the last verse of this chapter, that they trod him down, they stomped him, man. They stomped him in the gate, and he saw it with his eyes, but he never tasted the fruit thereof. Remember the prophecy of God's man? Listen, some of you know Christ. You have an inexhaustible supply of the bread of life right within your own heart. We do not well if we stay inside a wall of pride and just dry up. Let's get out, launch out across a desert of miracles, and let's share the wonderful truth that God can change men's lives.
Super cool! Super cool! Super cool!
Long live the super cool!
I wonder, are you a super cool? Or maybe, you know, just a super slob? That's up to you, really. It all depends on whether you're faked out or not. You probably heard about the lady that was up in a hotel, looking down, screaming like mad, big fire, you know, and it was getting kind of warm up there. She looked down, and here's a guy standing down there, a fireman, with a rescue net. And the guy's yelling, "Jump, lady, jump! Trust me, trust me!" And the lady, you know, she finally jumps. Her mistake was this. The fireman down below used to be a bullfighter. His name was Jose. And as she gets closer and closer, reflex takes over, and Jose pulls the net aside and says, "Ole!" And the lady goes, "Flat," you know. Now, she made a pretty desperate mistake, didn't she? In trusting old Jose. And I'll tell you, you can make a pretty desperate mistake if you trust the devil who stands there and says, "Come on, kid, trust me. Jump. Be a super slob, you know. Let me fake you out. Invest your life for material things alone. You know, be the greatest. Be big man on campus. Get on this fantastic search for popularity and try to be, you know, some of you girls, maybe someday you'll hear it sung, you know, 'Here she comes. Miscellaneous,' you know, you put the crown on your head, you think, boy, that would be just the very, that would be just the greatest." But don't be faked out. God says, "Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thy heart." And believe me, God knows how to bless you. God's not out to blast you. He's out to bless you. And God's way is always best. But the choice is yours. You know, this is a phony generation that we live in. I don't have to tell you that. All you have to do is, you know, look at the boob tube or watch television a little bit. And how about some of those commercials? Aren't they wild? They are really funny. You know, like they say, if you spray a little bit with a certain deodorant, you know, you're going to be all right all day. Don't trust it. Don't trust it. You'll lose a lot of friends that way. And if you brush a certain way with a certain something, you'll have fewer holes in your head than another group, you know. And if you wash your hair with a certain stuff, girls, that means that you can run through the wheat fields and the oats and the flax and through the corn, you know. And then when you get close to this guy, he's standing out there in the field, you know. And then when you get close to him, you know, after you've been, you won a letter in cross country, you know. And then it has the audacity to say, "The closer you get, the better you look." Oh, you got to be kidding me. Don't be faked out. Here's four guys who really knew what it was to be super cool. Man, these guys weren't faked out. You know what they did? Jesus was coming to Capernaum. And these four guys, instead of just trotting over to the house to get a big front seat themselves, they said, "Let's take our buddy over." So while they're sitting down there in the, you know, having a Coke in the local Capernaum drugstore, they said, "Let's wail on over and get our buddy and take him over." So they did. They went over and they said, "Hey man, where's your Bermudas and your tongs, you know, and let's get with it. Get on your Paisley shirt and let's get on with it." So there were four corners to the map. They each grabbed the corner and they took off. Now, they didn't have their dad's chariot or anything. They just humped it clear across town. And boy, this guy got heavy. You know, he's just laying around. He couldn't walk or anything. And they sweated out and they got clear across town. Well, when they got there, would you believe, the place was surrounded with newspaper men. No kidding. They were there from Jerusalem Bugle and the Capernaum Clarion. They were there from the United Press and this. Oh, it was terrible. They were just crowded on photographers and newspapers. Now hold it, McKee. Where do you get that? I don't find that in Mark 2. Well, the fourth verse says, "And when they could not get nigh unto him for the press." Well, I mean, there it is. It was there all along. We just didn't read carefully enough. So they came up, you know, and they tapped their buddy on their shoulder, and they said, "Hey, Charlie, help us get him in here. We want to get him into Jesus and see if something will happen to him." And Charlie said, "Man, you guys, I can't help you. I've been standing out here for 15 minutes, and I can't get any closer. Boy, my editor's really going to chew me on because I was supposed to get here early. You know, maybe if I turn my Rolleiflex upside down, I'd get a couple of shots. But why don't you try the side? went around the side, and then they went around to the back. Couldn't get in, so they said, "What, buddy, we're really sorry," and they took him home. Is that what happened? Hey, no. You know what they did? They got up on the roof. How about that? They got up on the roof, and they tore the roof apart. You say, uh-oh, vandals, vandals, terrible. But look, there was a real purpose to it. It wasn't just for kicks. They got the roof apart, and they lowered their buddy, and you know the story. Jesus said, "Son, your sins be forgiven thee." But that wasn't all they wanted. And then Jesus said, "All right, take up your bed and walk." And boy, I want to tell you, he rolled off that mat, and you didn't have to ask somebody to step aside. They knew a miracle when they saw it. Man, they were super cool. And now there was five of them. I think those guys came flying off of that building. I think they were that's probably the first mention of astronauts in the Bible. Those four guys came flying off that roof, and boy, they embraced their buddy, and they all took off. You know what I think happened the next day? I think they borrowed their dad's chariot, went down to the Capernaum Hardware. I think they loaded up some tile, you know, a little mortar and some straw or whatever it was they used to build roofs those days. I think they came back, and I think five of them got up on that roof and fixed the hole. What do you think? I kind of think they did. I think they did because they let it cost them something. They were super cool. They weren't faked out. They were in the in crowd that really matters. And that's the crowd I hope you get in. The in crowd is the crowd that's going to make it all the way. And when the big final exam comes, I hope you're on the right side. You can be, you know, through a personal faith in Jesus Christ. All right, I know that to most of you, and probably especially to most teenagers, life can really be a drag. But I want to tell you about somebody, and he had the most colossal drag that any century has ever known. His name is David, and we'll call him the skinny-armed sheep herder. But poor old David was out, you know, out on the hills talking to the sheep, and let me tell you, that's not too swift because they don't converse too sharp. And he didn't have much to do. All he's doing is just sitting out there and play Little Mamas and the Papas on his phonograph, you know, and throw a few rocks at telephone poles, you know, and it was a bad deal. Take his, you know, high school by correspondence course and things like this. And nothing to do. Man, what a drag. And he happened to notice one day that the Jeep was coming out from the ranch, so boy, he was happy to have anybody to talk to except those sheep. And a guy bombed out of the Jeep, and he said, "Hey, Dave," he says, "your dad wants you to run an errand for him, and so I'm supposed to take your place, and you womp on back in, and he'll tell you what to do." So David did, and he went back in. His dad said, "Now, David, your brothers are up here fighting a war, you know. They're not too far from us here, and they have those little guys in the black pajamas, you know, with the Kool-Aid hats on, and they're sneaking around those rice paddies and everything." And he said, "These guys need a little encouragement. I want you to take some goodies up there. I'll have a little bag for you. You know, you have some Diet Pepsi and some pizza mix and, you know, a few glazed donuts and so on. And you take these things up there. And by the way, we also want you to take some Limburger cheese because that crazy colonel up there, he likes the stuff. And I think, though, son, if you put it on the back of your Honda, you know, and tape it down and go about 25 miles an hour, it won't get to you." So the next morning, man, David was so glad to get out of there, you know. So he ties on the cheese and he takes off, you know, his Honda. You know, he takes off down the road. And he's going about 55 because he hated that Limburger, you know. So finally he gets up to the place where they're having the battle. Now, the way they fought in those days was something else. These guys, I don't know, they weren't too smart because what they do is they line up, you know, one on one hill, one on the other, you know. And in this case, it was the Israelites against the Philistines. And what they usually do is they have this little psychological warfare that they go through, you know, where the Philistines would come out and they'd go a whole bunch of yells, you know, "Yay, rah, rah, we're the greatest, you know, you guys are crummy." And then they'd have little cheers like, you know, they'd like 2 bits, 4 bits, 6.5, you know, "All for the Philistines, stand up and laugh," you know. And everybody would, and then they'd send out the pom-pom girls, you know, and they all have the best looking girls they had. And they get out there, you know, and they'd be going through this and that, and then here's all the Israelites, you know, with their binoculars, you know, looking, "Hey, man, look at that third month from the right, isn't she sharp?" Then these guys would drop these leaflets, you know, and say, "Yeah, you know, you have a day, but a third month from the right, you know, if you'll defect and come over to our side." Well, none of this psychological stuff worked very well. So finally, the date for the big battle had come, you know, and what the commanders would do is they wouldn't let these guys wash, you know. Terrible. Boy, and they'd steal all the right guard and everything, and these guys would off. In fact, one of the Philistines, you know, raised his arms one time, and somebody says, "Hey, put your arms down, son. You're too young to conquer the world," you know. And, you know, these guys, and they wouldn't let them shave. They'd take away all the goodies, you know, they shave with them, no buzz or anything like that, and they just felt itchy, you know, they're always scratching themselves. And they wouldn't let them
brush their teeth or anything. Oh, it was fabulous, you know. It was just awful. Nobody could even get near each other. And this is the way they'd get them all mean, you know, and all raunchy. And then finally they'd start. They'd line them up big lines and they'd march toward each other, you know. Just right for each other. Really dumb, you know. No, should have snuck around behind a tree or something. But no, here they come, right straight for each other. And then when they get close enough, you know, they drop these things, these tin cans they wore on their heads and everything, you know, they drop these babies down, they take their swords off and their spears, you know, and go whoosh, you know, meow, and pretty soon, you know, it got kind of slippery. So one of the guys, one of the referee, he goes, time out, okay, you guys, cool it, you know, hold it right there. And, you know, so they'd all stop. He said, okay, now everybody put on your galoshes, you know, so the guys, their mamas told them not to leave, you know, not to put on their galoshes. So they put on their galoshes, you know, and he's going, dime in, you know, back at it again. So David, he sits down, he parks his hand up against a tree, and he thinks, you know, he thinks this is what he's going to see. So he reaches over and, you know, pops a coin, and he's sitting there and thought, man, is this going to be great? You know, I'm going to get to see the battle. Can you imagine? What a bloodthirsty little shepherd he was, you know. Man, the kid was really looking forward to this. But instead of this, what he sees is a great big clown comes walking out of this camp of the Philistines over there. He comes, blah, 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 you know, like the jolly green, you know what. And there's another little old guy coming behind him, you know, dragging a big spear on the ground. He couldn't even carry it. Man, it was bad news. And, you know, David thought, hey, that guy's pretty good on stilts, you know. I've never seen anything like that. That's the tallest guy I've ever seen. They must have confiscated, you know, a couple of cases of Captain Crunch or something. Or in the corn place, the kid's been tauling up over there. Boy, he's really big. And so David thought, well, you know, he can't be for real. So he popped one of his contacts, you know, and then puts it in his mouth. You know how they do that? Then he sticks his finger in his eye and he checks again. And boy, I tell you, this guy didn't get any smaller. And I want to tell you something. That Goliath, he was a great big old honcho. He stood 9 feet, 8 inches tall. That's the truth. He stood 9 feet, 8 inches tall, and he was big. I mean, he was big everywhere else. This guy was really a moose. And you say, well, how do you know he was so big? Well, because the Bible says that the coat of mail that he wore under his armor, now you might refer to it as his underwear. You know, and he said the coat of mail that he wore under his armor weighed 250 pounds. Can you imagine hauling that around in the winter? I mean, this guy didn't wear it. He rusted it. You know? I mean, he couldn't sneak up on you, you know, like rattle, rattle, crash, crash. But here he comes. Down here, he's walking, you know, just proud, big, and smart aleck. Boy, was he a big clown. And the head of his spear weighed 25 pounds. No kidding. And the shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam. Great big thing. And he could handle it. Boy, he was really big. He comes down and he yells. I mean, he got a voice like, you know, you can't ever forget. He yells, hi, you guys up there, you dumb Israelites. You know, he called them a few other things, but I can't, you know, call them every. He called, really, it was worse than the locker room here in high school. Boy, he really cussed them out. He called them everything but late to lunch, I want to tell you. And he said, I'm the greatest. And the guy tapped, hey, somebody else already got that one before you, Goliath. You try something else. He said, send down your heavyweight champion, and we'll go through this bit down here, just the two of us, and we'll save all this slippery stuff, and whoever wins, that army wins. How's that grab you? And David thought, well, this guy's got to be some kind of a nut. He hasn't been watching television or reading any of the news magazines, because he knows that God has delivered the armies of Israel again and again, giving them fantastic victories. And why, God could wipe that guy out just like that. But there he was, standing down there challenging anybody to come. And David waits and said, boy, is he going to get his? And how about this? I get to sit here, ringside seat, heavyweight championship of the world. So he looks over here at all these tents, you know. Any minute, the guys will be pouring out of there to accept the challenge. I think you probably know nobody came pouring out of the tents to accept the challenge. So David thought, well, maybe they're having a little siesta, you know, sacked out. I think I'll check. So we went to the first tent. And he turns the corner there. And here's, just as he gets around the corner, he sees this thing come out of the tent, you know, and reach out for a shield, and it looks like a hand on the end of a leg, you know. I thought, man, I've never seen anything like that. So he comes up to the, you know, to the tent, and he knocks on the tent or scratches. How do you get in a tent? You know, but anyway, finally he gets inside there, and here's this guy sitting there with a big barbell, you know, he's doing his curls. His muscles, I mean, like coming out of his ears. This kid was really packed. He's doing his tricep extension, his bench presses, you know. No kidding, the guy was so muscular that when he scratched his head, you know, his bicep hit him in the mouth. Man, was he big. And David just, you know, stood there. Man, he said, I've never seen such a built in all my life. You're really fabulous built, you know. He said, listen, I got an idea. That guy out there screaming this challenge against the God of Israel and against, you know, that's just ridiculous. You know that because you're in God's army. Why don't you accept his challenge, go out there and let God deliver him into your hand, and I'll bet you'll even make the front page of Strength and Health or something. This just be great, you know. You look so great there posing with all your muscles. And the guy says, hey, kid, wait, some farm kid or something? Wait, what is this? You don't know what the score is, do you? Kid, we've got a morale problem in this camp. And that's it standing out there. We kind of figured that maybe if we ignore him, you know, he'll go away. Oh, and by the way, speaking of going away, see you around. He grabs him by the seat of the pants and David stand outside the tent. You know, how'd I get here? How'd I get here? And while he's standing there wondering, what in the world? This guy really chickened out. He looks down at the next tent and here's a couple of things sticking out there with feet on the end of them. And David thinks for a minute, you know, it's the first case of hair on gas pipes. But he gets closer and he sees they're real. So he gets in this tent and here's this great big long-legged guy sitting in there, you know, and he's, you know, kind of like Big Daddy Cool. He's really conceited, you know. He thinks he's just absolutely the living end. And he says, hiya, kid, what do you want? You want an autograph or something? I'll sign it right there on your nose. How's that be? No, David says, hey, but I recognize you. Sure I do. I saw your picture on the front page of Sports Illustrated. Fabulous, says, you made all Jerusalem in basketball, didn't you? I remember you. Man, you had a great year. That's fabulous. Say, listen, you're really tall, man. And look, the rest of us have to look that crazy guy in the belt buckle out there. You can at least look him in the chest. He said, why don't you accept the challenge and God will work a miracle through your life and deliver him into your hand. And boy, how'll that be? You'd be a big hero in all of Israel. And the guy said, now, wait a minute, kid. Well, I mean, I know you're just a young kid, but you see, I'm a university man. And you figure this thing out scientifically. You don't just bomb off there and say, by faith, God's going to deliver me in your hand. You just don't operate that way anymore. You know, you got to write a formula for God, and you got to put him in a test tube, and you got to figure it all out this way. Now, kid, he said, I haven't got time to talk to you about it right now. In fact, I'm not even sure there is a God anymore. You know, I've become so smart. But he said, I'll tell you, kid, what we'll do is just, you know, we just wait it out and try and think it through. Reason the whole bit out, you know. David says, yeah, but in the meantime, while you're reasoning, he's standing out there challenging God. He says, what are you going to do about that? And the guy says, well, I'm not going to do anything about it, kid. And by the way, I'm kind of busy. I'll see you around. And David says, hey, you know what you are? And the guy says, what? You know, he thinks he's going to tell him he's really super cool or something. And he said, you know what you are? The guy says, what? And David says, you're a great big long-legged chicken. And then David, he runs for it, you know, because the guy's so big and slow, you know, he couldn't get to him. So David's standing outside, and he's really ticked off. He's thinking, what is it with these guys? Imagine, I can't believe this. And while he's standing there fuming, he looks down at the end of the tents, and down there's the parking lot. And there's a guy out there in the swingingest chariot you've ever seen in your life. And David goes down, he gets Hot Rod magazine and so on, he can't believe this is the swingingest thing he's ever seen. And he goes down there, he says, hey, man. He said, what a set of wheels you got. Like too much slicks on the rear and four on the floor, you know. And you got the beetle wig on the antenna. And boy, this kid is really ready to go. He's got buckets in it, you know. I mean, you don't sit on the buckets. You put oats in them, you know, in those days. Got the Spartacus hubcap. He's really smooth. And he says, hey, can you really lay a patch with this thing? And the guy says, yeah, man, I can really squeal out. But, you know, burns a lot of hay. But he said, I like to do it once in a while. David says, how many cubes you got, man? You know, what's the displacement? And he said, well, I got four horsepower. Would you believe? There they are. Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4. You know. David says, man, that is really something. Listen, I got a great idea for you. The guy says, yeah, what? He said, you see that clown out there? He says, I try not to look. But he says, look, he says, you got transportation. Why don't you wing out there, do a couple laps around that clown, lop off his head, throw it in the trunk, and come on back. Let's get on with it. The guy says, kid, what is it with you? What are you, just drafted or something? You're a new guy in camp, I guess, aren't you? He said, do you think that's the first time he's challenged? Huh? And David says, well, yeah. What do you mean? And the guy said, man, that's not the first time he's challenged. That's the 80th time. David said, you're kidding. Uh-uh. Very serious. It's getting to be kind of a drag. This guy comes out there and wakes us up and everything, yells, you know, and says the same thing over again. Like a broken record. David said, 80 times and none of you guys have ever accepted the challenge? What's the matter? Don't you believe God's able to deliver him into your hand? And the guy gets kind of red, you know, and puts it in gear and takes off. David's standing there in a cloud of dust. Well, by this time, his brothers hear that he's there, you know. And his buddies are all ticked off, so he comes up, they come up and grab him by the back of the neck, you know, and said, all right, what are you doing? What are you doing up here? Who'd you leave the sheep with? I bet the bears and the lions and all them tore the sheep up, and your dad's wondering where you are, and your probation officer wondering what is it with you. You know, now, what are you doing up here?
David says, well, I brought some goodies for you guys. You know, I got all these nice things in the basket, and then they, you know, they're still shaking him, you know, like big brothers do. And he said, and I got the Limburger for the colonel. I said, oh, nice kid, he got the Limburger. Boy, the colonel really loved us, you know, we won't get the duty. And so the next thing he knows, a guy with a whole lot of brass and all this stuff hanging off him comes up and said, are you David, the skinny-armed sheep herder? And he says, well, yeah. And he said, well, the king wants to see you. David says, oh, no. This is worse than the principal. The next thing he knows, he's over in a great big tent, plumes flying. He walks in, and out walks King Saul. Now, David knew about this king. He really admired him. Saul was a great guy. I mean, he was tall. The Bible tells us that he stood head and shoulders above all the men of Israel. Now, this has nothing to do with his dandruff problem, you understand? This guy was just big. He was tall. He was taller than Daddy Longlegs over there, you know. And here he stands, great big, tall, rugged Saul with the medals, you know. He wears these medals on his pajamas and everything. And he's got these scars on his arms, you know, from all the many battles that he's been in. This guy's got experience. He's a veteran. He's a leader of men. He's not only the commander-in-chief, but he's a king. And there he stands, and David thinks, well, you know, I better say something about how good I am, you know. So he said, say, King Saul, did you hear about the bear and the lion that I killed, and I'm really smooth with a sheep, and I can hit a lot of telephone poles with my slingshot? And the king says, no, cool it, kid. He said, it's not this that I'm impressed with. It's the fact that you've got faith in God. You really believe that God will deliver that big giant into our hands? David says, why, of course. And he says, okay, you're our man. David says, huh? You're our man. We're gonna draft you, and we're gonna give you the distinct privilege of going out there and taking on Goliath. How's that grab you? David says, well, okay, I'll accept that challenge. So he went out. Saul tried to put on, you know, his heart shafter and Mark's armor, you know, and poor old David couldn't even move. So David says, look, let me do it my way, will you? He went out, he picked up 5 stones. You say, right there, McKee. 5 stones? There's only one giant out there. What's with the 5 stones? I'll tell you what it was. Goliath had 4 brothers. All of them were giants, and all of them were men of war who fought for the Philistines. David knew that. If you read 2 Samuel real carefully, you will too. And David went out, picked up 5 stones, you know, in case 4 brothers got excited, he had 1 for each of them. And he started out, and he walked down the hill, and when Goliath saw David, he really hit the ceiling. He said, what is this? You send a boy to do a man's work? He says, why, you little brat, come on out here, you're for the birds. Then I hold it, McKee, he didn't say you're for the birds. That's one, you know, pretty recent statement. Well, he did too, if you read there. He didn't say it exactly that way. But he said, I'm going to feed you to the fowls of the air. Now, that's for the birds, isn't it? And, you know, David's a little nervous, and he's not too original, so he says, Goliath, I'm going to feed you to the fowls of the air. You can't blame him for copying a little bit there. So, but the Bible goes on to say that when David got close to Goliath and he got a good look at him, he ran. Yep, he ran. Hey, but he didn't run away from him. He ran toward him. Isn't that great? Boy, what a difference. You know, direction is tremendously important. I wonder, which way are you headed? You'll never get to the right place on the wrong road. Not a chance. Make sure you're going the right direction. But you know, David was a guy who really was a swinger. He got that sling going, and it wasn't the kind, you know, you shoot through the you know, like between your fingers. Not that kind of a slingshot at all. This was one that you swing. He got that thing going. He was really a swinger, I'll tell you. And he got up closer, and Goliath was just waiting to get at him, you know, and David cut that stone loose. Boy, that thing was really going. And kaboom, it got him. And the Bible says that that stone embedded itself into the forehead of that giant. Now feel that bone up there. Go ahead. Some of you have to reach around that schnoz, but go ahead, live it up. Feel that? You know that's one of the thickest bones in the human body. You know why it's so thick? It's kind of protect that pee back in there, you know, that never works. You know, when you get a snap quiz or something and you think, boy, I know that, but it just never seems to come up, you know, when you need it. That's what that's for. That big bone there is to protect that little thing back there. And the Bible says that the stone embedded itself into the forehead. I think God just put a rocket on it. And boy, like a jet, that thing just socked into Goliath. And you know, the last thing I think Goliath probably said was, man, nothing like this ever entered my mind before. And boom, down on his nose he went. David rushed up, grabbed the sword out, a great big long sword he could hardly lift, put it on the back of his neck, put one foot on his back, one foot in the back of his head, started sawing away on that size 28 man. Hey, and you know what happened. Boy, the victory belonged to the armies of God. But look, the big difference is this, and it's in attitude. Saul was a king, had all the experience, all the equipment. Saul took a look at Goliath and he said, man, you got to be kidding. That guy's too big to hit. Little David came up and he said, step aside, Clyde. This guy's too big to miss. You see the difference? And listen, in your witness for Jesus Christ, over in that blackboard jungle that you attend 5 days a week, let it be this way with you. Man, God and I are a majority in any situation. It's not too big to hit. I'm not going to chicken out. It's too big to miss.